Mephistopheles raised a brow.
Andreas, this is Miss Wadsworth, my newest protégé. We're finding where her talents are best put to use for the grand finale. Miss Wadsworth, this meddlesome creature, is Andreas.
I hid my surprise when the ringmaster pushed back from the table and offered his seat. With a lingering look at me that might singe someone with its heat, he bowed.
Excuse me. I'll go find us some champagne.
Remembering my role, I sunk my teeth into my lower lip and watched the ringmaster pick his way through the performers. I hoped my expression appeared like longing and not constipation. When he'd made it halfway across the large room, he paused, as if he'd forgotten something. He pivoted slowly on one heel, halting once he faced me again. Grinning, he blew a kiss in my direction, and then continued on his way. This time the flush in my face wasn't faked. Andreas cleared his throat, clearly uncomfortable, which made for two of us. I shook myself out of my mortification and forced my attention on the young man before me. It was time to get to work on my part of the bargain. "What magic do you have to show me?" I asked, trying to sound as interested as possible. "More card tricks?" A smile twitched across his lips. Unlike Mephistopheles, there was no trouble or heat behind it. If anything, he appeared quite shy. My mind immediately churned with suspicion.
"It was the first trick I did well, and it's not difficult to learn."
He held a playing card up with one hand, a queen of hearts. With his other hand, he flicked the card, and before my very eyes, I now stared at the king of spades. I blinked.
"It's called a snap change. Mephistopheles says, trick the eyes, convince the mind. What you need is two cards, and you hold them right over each other."
I nearly groaned. "Every time one of you claims something is easy, I'll know you're lying. How on earth is this simple?" His smile deepened, revealing a dimple.
"My Liesel used to say something very similar. She hated card tricks, but she loved this one."
He repeated it, and I still couldn't identify the trick.
"Place the two cards on top of each other. Then all you need to use are your thumb, index, and middle fingers. The middle finger pulls the top card under, revealing the back card. The flick is the misdirection. There's something about an audible distraction that tears attention away for that one critical moment."
He did it a few more times, moving slow enough for me to pick up on the mechanics. Basically, the front card slid underneath the other and rested between the thumb and middle finger, hidden from view by the second card. There wasn't anything simple about the trick, but it was easier for me to attempt, more like a snapping motion. Andreas handed me the cards and watched as I fumbled along. I wasn't sure how my mastering a card trick would lend authenticity to the Moonlight Carnival. But it was fun, and my true goal of learning about the performers was being met, so I continued to practice. "What does Liesel do for the carnival?" I asked, attention straying to him. "Is that how the two of you met?" He shuffled the deck, removed two more cards, and continued demonstrating the trick while I mimicked him.
"No, she didn't work for the circus. Mephistopheles had sent me into a village in Germany one day for roses. I took one look at her and knew I was forever lost. She actually gifted me with the looking glass I use for my divinations."
"Are you two married?" Sadness descended into his shoulders, weighing them down.
"Betrothed. Were betrothed.
My Liesel. She passed away." My thoughts flashed to Thomas. I could not fathom carrying on without him, and saw a different sort of strength in Andreas when I looked upon him now. I'm so very sorry for your loss." I wanted to ask how, but couldn't quite bring myself to do it. He absently flicked the cards, snapping one over the other in rapid succession.
"Gian tells me it gets easier, though I'm not certain that sort of loss ever fades away."
I set my own cards down. "Has Gian lost someone he loves as well?" Andreas glanced over at his friend, unblinking as Gian practiced his sword tricks.
his entire family. They were murdered. The swords?
He nodded as Jian hefted one and sliced through a stack of wood.
I think he imagines using them on the men who did it.
How? Do you know any details? Andreas's gaze darted around.
Only that soldiers stormed his village while he was away. They killed everyone and burned their houses. When he returned, it was the charred bodies and smoking ashes. There are rumors that he hunted them down and slit their throats while they made camp. But I don't think that's true. He took up practicing with blades after their deaths. He didn't want to be unable to defend anyone again.
Dear God in heaven, I said, feeling as though I'd been kicked in my center. That's horrid. How?
Did it get to be so late?
Mephistopheles appeared in my line of vision, holding a pocket watch up to his masked face.
I believe it's time for us to say goodnight. You have an early morning lesson, and you need your beauty rest.
I was too saddened by Jian's history to form annoyance at the snipe. I stole one last glance at Jian before standing. I made to leave when Andreas jumped up.
Don't forget your cards, miss. You'll need to practice as often as possible. We all do.
I smiled and accepted the playing cards. Mephistopheles paraded us out in front of all the performers, his hand never leaving the small of my back. Once we'd made it to the darkened corridor, he stopped and removed a letter from his jacket.
Here. Houdini had started writing this before the manufactured accident.
Accident? What do you mean? I opened it up, brows raised. Most of it's covered in ink.
I know.
He grinned.
You ought to have seen him carry on about how clumsy I was after I bumped into him. Thought for certain he might have gutted me right there if he could have.
He leaned over my shoulder, tracing the opening line.
To my dearest?
I batted him away. I can read, thank you. I scanned what remained of the ink-splattered letter, stomach clenching. To my dearest? I cannot wait until we're... I'm sending more as soon as... You never seen such a sight as the... Got a rush, but I'll write again bef... Love your ever faithful Harry. It was as he'd said. Houdini loved another. I longed to crumple the paper, but tucked it into my bodice instead. On the surface, my bargain might have appeared to benefit Mephistopheles more. But I suddenly felt much better about protecting Liza from Harry Houdini and his lies. 13. Ace of Wands. Moonlight Carnival Practice Room. RMS Etruria. 4 January, 1889. Like this? I asked, looping my legs over the bar. Even with the safety net below, I did not feel an ounce of comfort. And I didn't think my costume, a mere boneless frost-blue corset and thick white stockings, was entirely to blame. Though I was slightly concerned the added weight of the excessive beading might ensure my death should I fall. Cassie snorted, but didn't make fun. You'll only swing back and forth. With your legs hooked over the bar, you'll be able to grip it tightly enough that you won't fall. She held the bar steady, brown eyes fixed to mine, not in challenge, but curiosity. Don't worry, this isn't what your role in the finale is going to be. This is just for fun. I seriously questioned their idea of a good time. Swinging from a tiny bar more than 20 feet in the air seemed like certain death. How she managed it in beaded costumes with long trains was either a miracle or magic, or both. Sebastian swung over from his side of the practice room, legs over the bar and arms extended outward, a wide grin on his face. As if he weren't already talented enough with his contortions, now he was doing them in the sky.
Easy, see? All you have to do is let go.
You're all mad, I muttered under my breath. Absolutely mad. Normal is overrated. Cassie nudged me toward the bar. Extraordinary is unforgettable. I took the bar in my hand, but the Empress quickly stopped me. She clapped my hands with a strange white substance that felt both sticky and chalky. Resin, it helps with your grip. I thought I was only using my legs for this.
Yes, well, Cassie turned me about, placing my hands on the bar. You need to hold on and then loop your legs through, right?
I'd much sooner practice naked on the prow and sing a bawdy house song.
Everything all right up there?
Mephistopheles yelled, cupping his hands around his mouth.
Practice is almost over. Guests will be heading out for breakfast soon, and we must deposit Miss Wadsworth in her chambers before anyone notices her absence.
I shot him a dirty look that he probably missed, since I was higher than a building. Nuisance. I'd like to see him swing on the trapeze. Cassie laughed. Don't challenge him. He'll do it. And if he breaks his neck, then we're all out of a job. And I need the money. I took the bar in my hands, ignoring the dampness that seemed to seep through the resin powder. Are you saving for something? She adjusted my grip and demonstrated how to bring my legs up and over, ignoring my question. My stomach flipped. No, I... She heaved a breath out. I made unwise choices and may owe a bit of money to people. I threaded one leg over the bar, heart racing for multiple reasons. People who also work for the carnival. Cassie motioned for me to repeat the procedure with my other leg. I hesitated, but only for another moment, hoping she'd keep talking. This was exactly what I needed, information that might prove to be a motive for murder. She helped pull my leg over the bar and made sure it rested solidly against the backs of my knees. While I did feel secure with the grip, I felt anything but comforted while dangling upside down. The ground was very, very far away. No, she finally said. The people I owe aren't in the carnival. Before I could inquire further, she untied the trapeze from where it had been secured to two large poles for me and gave me a slight push. I couldn't control the yelp that escaped my lips as I flew across the room. I closed my eyes, fearing that I'd either be sick or panic and do something stupid and go crashing to my death.
Open your eyes, Mephistopheles called up. Enjoy the view. Come on now, I didn't peg you as a coward.
The rogue was squawking like a chicken. I cracked a lid, colors and lights flashed by, much like I imagined my life to be flying away. I swung one way, then the other, each pass seeming to go on simultaneously forever and too fast to recall.
Look at that, he shouted up. You're flying!
My heart thrashed and my breath came in short bursts, though fear was ebbing away to excitement. I slowly extended my arms. In this moment, I understood the draw of the carnival, the magnetic pull to run away from restrictions and simply let go, to allow myself complete and utter freedom to soar. Despite my morning trapeze practice, the late-night bargain I'd struck with Mephistopheles felt like I had, indeed, sold my soul to the devil. I had no right to meddle with Liza's affairs, yet how could I sit back and remain inactive while Houdini destroyed her life on a romantic whim? His letter clearly indicated his love and admiration for a woman who was not my cousin. And yet, imagining myself handing the evidence over and watching her heart shatter felt equally horrible. I paced along the small rug of our cabin, dreading the next hour of performances. I was no better than those acting on stage, pretending to be a decent cousin when I was a filthy liar. Liza was content with her choice, but only because she didn't know the whole truth. Somehow, having Mephistopheles intervene seemed kinder than flat-out breaking her heart. Truth was a blade I did not wish to stab her with. Perhaps he should be the one to give her the letter. Seemed like the sort of wretched thing he'd enjoy.
Audrey Rose?
Liza hovered in the connecting room doorway. She was resplendent in a raspberry-colored evening gown that had layers of black lace over the skirts. No one would recognize her, dressed in her finery and without one of those filigree masks. I was thankful the Moonlight Carnival required such costumes. It would help keep my cousin's identity a secret and make it easy for her to return to England without society being any the wiser. Mephistopheles truly had considered everything when he'd run from his own family name, whatever that was. You look gorgeous, cousin.
It's a bit odd, she said, turning her face from side to side in my looking glass, puckering her lips. I've not sat in on a performance since London, though it will be nice to be a member of the audience for once. An entire evening free of the costume makeup will be delightful. It feels like plaster and dries my skin in the most wretched ways.
Liza stopped adjusting her coiffure and glanced at me in the looking glass.
Is everything all right? You seem on edge. You're not even dressed yet. Are you not going to the show?
I plopped onto my bed, the weight of my secrets pressing me down.
I'm not sure.
I was up early and didn't sleep very well. Perhaps I might miss this one night. Liza dropped her hands and came to my side.
You simply cannot miss this show. The Ace of Wands will be truly remarkable to witness. I've seen her practice and still cannot believe how brave she is, swallowing fire. You'd enjoy speaking with her too. She's always studying new journals on engineering and science. A lot of the performers draw up ideas and give them to Mephistopheles to create.
I raised my brows at this.
He engineers the props entirely alone.
Oh yes, Liza nodded. He makes all of them. No dream is too far-fetched or out of reach. Whenever we're practicing, he sequesters himself away to craft what we need. He doesn't usually permit anyone in his cabin. He claims it distracts him. But I believe he's not keen on having anyone steal his innovative secrets. He plays everything close to his chest, that one.
So no one ever has access to his personal room, then?
I tried sounding as nonchalant as possible.
I'm sure the women he beds are invited in.
Liza!
My face burned, yet my blood froze. It was a crass angle I hadn't considered. Perhaps a jilted lover did commit the murders. Maybe she was intent on destroying his carnival the way he'd destroyed her heart. I'd never seen him without his mask, but the sharp cut of his jaw and fullness of his lips hinted at attractiveness.
Does he take many women to his chambers?
Why all the interest in the ringmaster?
Misunderstanding the source of my curiosity, she narrowed her eyes.
You have something real and grand and irreplaceable with Mr. Cresswell. Mephistopheles is a great showman, but that's the crux of it. He's all show. I caution you to remember that. He's inviting, but in the way the flame on a candle is. It might set ambiance, create a sense of warmth, but if you get too close, it will burn you.
You've become quite the poet, I said lightly. I wanted to ask if she had those same fears and concerns over Houdini, but pressed my lips together. I motioned vaguely in the direction of my trunk.
What should I wear?
Liza jumped up, clapping her hands together.
Something breathtaking.
Carefully sorting through my gowns, she lifted one up as if it were a prize. Pale sage, with pink roses and ribbons that had been sewn onto one shoulder and cascaded from the right hip to the floor. It was certainly a showstopper.
This is it. You will be more dazzling than the performers in this.
Tonight, the dining saloon had transformed once again. Tables were dressed in dark blue silk, the surfaces shiny enough to reflect lights, while crystal goblets twinkled like glitter. White calla lily and eucalyptus garlands spilled over each table and brushed the checkered floor, decadent and fragrant. I longed to run my fingers over the velvety softness of the petals, but managed to maintain an air of dignity. I glanced at Liza and Mrs. Harvey, who wore similar expressions of awe. I wasn't the only one who felt as if I were walking into a star-filled dream. Thomas and Uncle were already swirling drinks, heads bent in what appeared to be a heated debate, when Mrs. Harvey, Liza, and I entered the room. I'd made excuses for not going over case details with them this afternoon, locking myself away to practice sleight of hand. It was disastrous. I mostly got a workout in picking up the cards after I'd dropped them all over the floor, though the snap trick Andreas had taught me was slowly improving. Always in tune with my presence, Thomas lifted his attention, and heat shot through me as our eyes met across the room. He said something to my uncle, pushed back from his seat, and was at my side a moment later, offering his arm. My pulse thrummed at his touch.
Ladies, you are all stunning this evening.
He placed a hand around one ear, tilting his head to the side.
Did you hear that? I believe it was the sound of hearts shattering across the room. Do be careful as you step over bloody shards.
I shook my head. Honestly, bloody shards?
Do you blame them for being envious? I'd be riotously jealous of me too. In fact, I might challenge myself to a duel after supper.
Thomas grinned, escorting us all to the table without further teasing. I swore, sometimes his manners were so polite, so exquisitely regal. I had a hard time remembering he was the same young man who'd been called an automaton during the Ripper investigation. He leaned in, whispering so only I could hear.
We had an interesting day. Captain Norwood called us in to discuss a rather delicate matter.
He pulled my chair out, then did the same for Mrs. Harvey. A waiter had come over and assisted Liza. Thomas took a seat next to me.
Apparently, a first-class cabin was broken into last night, sometime during supper and the show.
How strange.
Indeed. Murdered passengers, a missing girl, a burglary. This ship is a floating nightmare for the captain.
Chandeliers dimmed. It wouldn't be long before the show now. Waiters moved around the room with practiced ease, setting covered trays down at each table. I wasn't sure what was on the menu tonight, but whatever it was, it smelled divine. It helped cover up the slight odor of kerosene coming from the stage. My mouth watered as the scent of butter, lemon, and garlic wafted up, greeting my senses. A carafe of white wine was set at our table, indicating our entree might be seafood. I hoped for prawns, or scallops, or even a nice plump lobster. I shook myself free from hungry thoughts, returning to the matter at hand. How did the captain or occupants know the cabin had been broken into?
The lady's trunk had been rummaged through, Thomas said, lifting the lid of his tray.
Half a lobster broiled to perfection and smothered in garlic butter with fragrant green herbs sat in the center of the plate. I nearly groaned when I lifted my own lid.
Her finest bolts of silk were missing, along with a few scarves. As you know, her maid would have taken greater care with those garments. She'd never scatter them about like that.
Why was she traveling with bolts of fabric? I asked.
She was bringing them to New York to have them made into dresses by a renowned dressmaker. Apparently, the pattern on it was designed for a costume ball. It had vines wrapped around trees near what would be the hem, and constellations near what would have been the bodice.
So the fabric was stolen, but the woman was accounted for, correct?
Yes,
Thomas said, pausing to sip from his wine.
She reported it to the maids who came to clean her room.
Hmm. Well, if it were to turn up, it would be unmistakable. It was all so strange. Missing bolts of fabric, young women who seemed to vanish under the twinkling dark skies. Two hideous murders. Surely it had to be connected. But how, was the question of the hour. Last night we'd had a respite, though I feared it wouldn't be long before another body showed up. What do you make of it? Thomas cut into his lobster, stopping to answer me before taking a bite.
Honestly? I'm not sure. There's not been much in the way of clues, making it difficult to deduce anything. Missing silk isn't that unusual. We're aboard a ship with a lot of passengers, most of whom don't need to sign their true names for the ship log. Expensive fabrics fetch decent coin. It might be the only motivation for the theft.
Unless it's all connected, then theft isn't entirely the motivation.
Unfortunately, we have no way of knowing what's connected and what isn't. Thus far, we know she's got no affiliation with either victim.
Thomas sipped from his goblet.
Conjecture and speculation aren't solid facts.
He sounded a lot like Uncle. While I agreed that divorcing myself from emotions was pertinent while in the laboratory, I also knew the value of trusting my gut instincts when something didn't feel right about the theft. I took a careful bite of my dinner, relishing the savory flavors as the lights turned way down. I turned my attention to the stage, where swathes of silver and pale blue silk hung from the ceiling. Stars and snowflakes knotted at their ends. It simultaneously gave the impression of shooting stars and falling snow. glitter caught the dim light as the stars twirled in place. It was stunning. Another masterpiece for the Moonlight Carnival. I expected Mephistopheles to appear on stage amidst the smoke and cymbals explosion. I did not expect to see a petite young woman, twirling twin flames at her sides, stride into the room. The scent of kerosene was stronger now, burning my nose a bit with its sharpness. Perhaps they should have waited until after supper before sending her out. The delicate flavor of lobster was all but ruined.
That's Anisha. Her tarot is the Ace of Wands.
Liza broke away from her conversation with Uncle and Mrs. Harvey, leaning in to whisper,
"Her costume's supposed to represent ice."
I could see how that was true. Silver hair matched sequins sewn across her corset and was braided in thick strands about the crown of her head. Her skin was painted bluish-white everywhere it was exposed, arms, hands, face, and across the sweep of her collarbone. It was chilling, in a way, seeing how she appeared as a creature born of frost, who played so menacingly with fire. Her top hat and corset were a white so pure they almost seemed ice blue. In fact, upon closer inspection, I could see pale blue threads shot through with silver trimming the entire ensemble. Even her eyes, exposed by larger holes in her mask, had been edged in blue and gold, and her lashes were pure white. She looked like a frozen star. She lifted a wand of fire and exhaled, flames streaming out as if she were a dragon. Gasps went up around us as she strutted to the opposite end of the stage and repeated the trick. I couldn't help but stare as she took the same wand of fire and swallowed it as if it were a delicacy.
"It's magnificent, isn't it?" Liza asked,
eyes following the fire eater as she cartwheeled across the stage, stood tall, and swallowed another torch of flames. A stagehand ran another set of flaming wands out, and she tipped her head back, spitting flames skyward.
"Their acts might be a lie or an illusion, but they live honestly. They don't hide who they are or pretend to play by society's rules. Not like the nobility, who smile to your face while sticking a dagger in your back."
I dropped my gaze to my plate. The food tonight truly was exquisite, though I found my appetite to be suddenly uncooperative. If Liza knew I was the one holding a dagger to her dreams of wedding Houdini, she'd never speak to me again. I spent the next few moments with my head half in the conversations around me and half on the guilt that kept piling up. It wasn't until the first screams began that I jolted back into the here and now. 14. The Star. Dining Saloon. RMS Etruria. 4 January, 1889. A fire erupted on stage, turning the fantastical winter setting into a hellscape. Flames roared at fleeing guests, jumping from one silk thread dangling from the ceiling to the next. Now instead of snowflakes and shooting stars, fire and ash rained down. Anisha frantically shouted for assistance behind the curtains, and buckets of water appeared. As the acrid odor of smoke drifted through the air, and black soot sloshed over the stage, the screaming increased. Another, almost familiar scent wafted around. It smelled as if it were...
"Merciful God above, what is that?"
Liza grabbed my arm so hard I yelped.
"Up there, I think I may be ill."
I dragged my focus skyward and felt the blood drain from me. Tied up in exquisite silks cocooned about each arm, a person, shrouded in black gauze, swayed spread-eagle above the stage, a black crown of stars fastened about its head. Flames engulfed the figure from its feet as if it were a human torch sprung to life. I stared, frozen with disbelief, as chunks of roasting flesh began splattering down. The person had been hung upright, the flames traveling from the feet toward the head at a fierce pace. Surely this couldn't be real. It hadn't been so long since my last delusion. I'd been plagued with them while in Romania. That's what this horror was, a trick of the mind. Only it wasn't.
"Don't look."
I clutched my cousin and pulled her head to my shoulder, allowing her to sob. Thomas met my gaze and held it, offering me his strength and allowing mine to fortify him in return. I ran my hands over Liza's hair,
hoping to soothe her and myself with the action.
It's all right. It's going to be all right.
Everyone remain seated and calm. The flames are mostly contained to the body.
Uncle swept his attention over our table. His first priority was to ensure our safety, though I knew he'd want to get to the victim quickly. He looked to Thomas and nodded, silently passing along responsibility before he disappeared into the exiting crowd.
It isn't alive, Thomas said, his voice calm despite the fiery inferno and Mrs. Harvey's wails. Look.
The last thing I wanted to do was stare at the nightmare before us, but my brain slowly slipped into the coolness of a scientist.
How?
I forced myself to ignore the scent of burning flesh and hair, to look beyond the clumps of Lord knew what that slopped to the ground. I rocked Liza gently, registering the lack of screams or movement, while the fire turned the person into a living star. Thomas was right. Whoever it was had already been dead before being set aflame. A kindness, if one could call being murdered, then having your corpse torched kind. With a jolt, the body above the stage jerked downward, and those who hadn't yet made it out the door to safety screamed in horror.
Lower the ropes again!
Mephistopheles rushed onto the stage, shouting at crew members who must be hidden in the rafters.
Cut it down! Cut it down now!
Two men wielding swords ran under the burning body, hacking at the disintegrating fabric and dodging burning ashes that rained down on them. It might have been Gian and Andreas, but I was seemingly only capable of rocking Liza and trying to keep my own tears from escaping. Narrowing my world to that one comforting motion held me together. Waiters and staff shouted for order, but the patrons were beyond their control. Tables turned over, women swayed and men shoved. It was an absolute horror show as people fought to squeeze through the only two exit doors.
Smother the flames!
Captain Norwood emerged into the chaos, tossing horse blankets at the people on stage.
Stamp them out!
Mrs. Harvey held a hand over her mouth, but the lines of wetness streaking down her face betrayed her fright. I wanted to obey Uncle and remain seated and calm, though I also longed to take my loved ones from this hell and shelter them from all the horrible things the world could bring forth. I wanted to bury my face in my pillows and scream until my throat felt raw and my tears had dried up. I could stand dissecting bodies, but watching a person burn was entirely different. Whoever had done this was a monster, the likes of which even Jack the Ripper and Vlad Dracula would hesitate to emulate.
Oh God, that smell!
Liza buried her face farther into my shoulder. My own emotions reared up, trying to overtake me, but I grabbed them and shoved them deep within. I could not succumb to them now, possibly not ever. Everything around us became mechanical in my mind, the only way I could process what was happening and not crumble with grief. The body finally fell to the stage, the sound like an 8-stone sack of oats crashing to the floor. Most of the damage in the room had only been done to the corpse and the silks that had tied it up, aside from the sooty water spilling over the stage and puddling on the floor. The dining saloon escaped ruination. My macabre gaze returned to the charred remains. I did not wish to examine it up close. I did not want to believe this was real. But wishes and wants had no place in my heart. Thomas patted Mrs. Harvey's shoulder, doing his best to be comforting, though I could see the strain in his own expression. It was hard to shift into that cold calm when the scent of burnt flesh stung your nose and eyes.
Mrs. Harvey, are you able to bring Liza back to your chambers?
The older woman's lip trembled, but she nodded sharply.
Good. Everyone's almost gone, and the fire's out now. You should be all right. I want you both to go straight to the cabin and lock the door. I'll check on you when I escort Audrey Rose in a little while. All right?
He spoke calmly, but there was a strength in his voice that made my senses slowly come to. It seemed to have the same effect on Mrs. Harvey. She blinked a few times, then held her arms out to Liza.
Come, dear. Let's get us some water for a bath.
Liza loosened her grasp on me enough to look into my face. I'm not sure what she saw there, but she quickly blinked back fresh tears.
You ought to come with us. Please, please don't go near that stage. Please, come with me.
I wanted to. More than anything, I wanted to clutch my cousin's hand and run from this room, never looking back,
I'd only ever questioned my love of forensic science once before, and this was testing my resolve again.
I'll join you in a little while, I promise.
No, you have to!
There's a blade in my nightstand.
I hugged her close.
I want you to get it, and keep it with you until I return. Do not allow anyone in unless it's either myself, Thomas, or Uncle. Not Mephistopheles, not anyone from the carnival, not even Harry. Do you understand?
I'd meant for my speech to be fortifying, but Liza's tears spilled down her face, dripping onto the collar of her bodice.
Are we unsafe? Do you believe we'll be attacked next?
It is a precaution, I said. Nothing more.
I gripped her hand tightly. Take care of Mrs. Harvey, all right? Liza pressed her lips together. I could see the molten core of her harden into steel. She might have bent a little, but she was too strong to break. She gripped my hands back and nodded.
I'll do my best.
She faced Mrs. Harvey and, though there were traces of fear in the way her hands shook, she straightened up.
Let's hurry.
With a final glance over her shoulder, Liza guided our chaperone out of the smoky room. I watched the door a few seconds after they'd gone, gathering up my own inner steel. A gentle touch on my arm indicated it was time to don my own mask. Now I would perform the role of forensic scientist. I took one more deep breath, immediately regretting it, as smoke singed my nose. I coughed, which only made it worse.
Here, this might help a bit with the smell and the smoke.
Thomas handed me a damp napkin, then dabbed one into a water goblet for himself. He held the cloth to his face, allowing it to act as a barrier. I did the same, and the itch in my throat eased. Thomas kept his attention on me while I steadied myself.
Better?
I nodded.
Thank you.
Without uttering another word, we made our way to the stage and smoking remains. Uncle was already standing over them.
Captain, I need this stage clear of people for the rest of the evening. We must salvage what we can as far as evidence is concerned. No crew.
Norwood dragged a hand down his face. There were bags under his eyes, indicating he hadn't slept well, which was understandable. His magical voyage had diverted from heaven, sent to hellbound.
Anything you need, Dr. Wadsworth. But we must clean up the tables and linens and... Not now. This entire room must be cleared out immediately.
Uncle crouched beside the blackened corpse. He flicked his gaze up to me.
We will perform the post-mortem here.
My palms tingled as I stood at the foot of the stage, eyeing our temporary laboratory. Silks that hadn't burned entirely hung in tatters. Smoke rose from the body, and ashes covered much of the scene like grey snow. It seemed the most wretched of places to carve open a corpse, but was actually quite fitting, given the theatrics of it all. A crew member rushed over to Uncle, handing him his medical satchel. Uncle must have sent for it as soon as he'd left our table. I had no idea how he always remained calm during the worst of storms, and could only hope to emulate him one day. The young man backed away from the scene, his eyes wide and unblinking. A few moments later, the dining saloon was empty and we were ready to work. Mechanically, I took aprons from Uncle's bag and handed them out, then tied my own about my waist. The flowers on my gown bulged, and the hem would most certainly get ruined with soot. But I didn't care. I removed my gloves and folded them neatly. They would affect my grip on the scalpels. Thomas helped me up onto the stage, and I somehow found the will to slow my heartbeat, to clear my mind. I stood over the body, pressing the dampened cloth to my nose.
The fire started at the feet, I said, voice cracking.
Uncle and Thomas jerked their attention from the corpse to me.
The gauze melted there, but not on the face. Same with the burnt skin. It's charred on the legs, but the head isn't as bad. Thomas was correct earlier. Whoever she wasn't alive when the fire began.
Thomas stalked around the body, fingers tapping his lips as he glanced from the ceiling to the floor and all around. His face was a mask of ice. When he switched into this role, I understood why others were sometimes frightened of him. Except now I no longer thought their taunts of him being an automaton were correct. When he transformed into a deductive scientist, he looked more like an unforgiving god, sent to mete out justice. A muscle in his jaw flickered.
An emerald ring. Looks to be an heirloom.
I ripped my attention off of Thomas and stared at the ring, heart pounding. A memory struck me at once.
Miss Crenshaw, I blurted. Her mother said she had an emerald ring, and she never took it off.
Thomas knelt beside the body.
Victim has auburn hair. Lady Crenshaw has a similar shade, though it's not definitive proof. No, but it's a start.
Uncle twisted his moustache.
We'll need to collect physical descriptions and see if the Crenshaws can confirm height and weight. It's not impossible to identify the body, but let's not traumatize anyone by making them inspect it if we don't need to. I'd also like to know if Dr. Arden has ever treated any member of the family. Perhaps the victims are all connected to him.
He nodded toward the ring.
Once we complete our investigation, we'll also see if this is indeed the ring they'd mentioned.
He set his mouth into a grim line.
Hand me my scalpel, Audrey Rose.
I did as I was told. Normally, the bodies were already without clothes when I assisted Uncle in his laboratory. Removing the clothing was a bit harder in this case. Uncle had to carefully cut away what fabric he could, doing his best not to accidentally carve off burnt flesh. Instead of risking harm to the lower half of the body, he focused on cutting away material from the torso up. I noted that she'd been stripped to her underthings, and from what was left, the lace appeared to be of a fine quality. She was likely another first-class passenger, our murderer's preferred victims. Uncle moved briskly and efficiently, his years of training and practice showing. In a few moments, he had the body ready for our inspection. After performing a quick external examination and finding no obvious outward causes of death, he brought the scalpel to the flesh and made a Y incision, swiftly parting the skin. I handed him the rib cutters and stood back as her inner cavity was exposed. Uncle wiped his hands down the front of his apron, smearing the cream fabric with rust-colored liquid. I imagined he longed to wash in carbolic soap, but couldn't worry about contamination now. He leaned over the body, sniffing. Previous experience told me he was looking for signs of poison. Often a scent could be detected near the stomach if it had been ingested. I tried not to think about the victims of our last case in Romania. I handed him another blade, and he carefully opened the stomach, searching through its contents. He rooted around for a bit, then stepped back.
If she ate chocolate cake, sugared berries, and champagne before dying, then what does that indicate? She must have had an awful stomachache, Thomas said blandly.
Thomas! I shot him a look of horror. Be serious!
I am.
He held his hands up.
All of those are sweet, and more than likely to hide poison in them. I imagine her stomach must have hurt immensely. It probably started slowly, and she'd thought it was simply from the overindulgence. Then she would have likely figured out something was wrong soon after, when the pain increased and the perspiration began in earnest.
He pointed to her hands, red and splotchy from where they'd been burned.
Her nails are broken, but the cuts are on her palms, not from fighting the murderer. A fine indicator that she clutched herself, trying to dull the pain.
Uncle removed the stomach and motioned for a tray. I held it steady as he deposited the organ on it with a slick thud, doing everything in my power to not picture the broiled lobster the tray had held earlier. With forceps, he pulled a few undigested berries out.
We'll need to run tests, naturally, but these appear to be belladonna.
I mentally flipped through lessons on poisons. Belladonna was a nightshade, sometimes called the devil's berries. An uncomfortable feeling slid through my bones. She would have suffered greatly after ingesting that many berries. Her heart rate likely sped up, her breathing and muscles unable to work properly. Whoever had fed this dessert of death to her was heartless. I could not fathom what it must have been like, sitting there, watching her body convulse as death claimed her. This murder was slow and deliberate, the staging of the body extreme. I placed the berries in a vial for further inspection, watching Uncle sew the corpse together again. His stitches were neat and precise, exactly as he'd taught me.
Have the captain show Lord and Lady Crenshaw the ring. See if they're able to identify it as their daughter's.
He turned his attention on the body, his expression sad.
It's the least we can offer, as far as peace goes.
Thomas went to do the gruesome task of sliding the ring off her finger, but I stopped him. I didn't want to be so cold and clinical in this moment. It felt much too solemn for that. I bent down and gently lifted her arm, taking great care as I removed what had once been a treasure to her, according to her family. I sat on my heels a second more, then laid her arm over her chest. She had been tortured, murdered, then had her body turned into a spectacle of fear. The star, I said, mostly to myself. Thomas and Uncle wore similar expressions of confusion. The tarot card most likely associated with this staged death. I didn't want to tell them that I'd gotten hold of a deck of tarot cards along with my playing cards, so I shrugged. I borrowed Liza's cards and studied them last night. This body looks like that card. We need to figure out what it means. Combined with the others, it might lead us to our murderer. Uncle looked skeptical, but nodded assent. I pushed myself to a standing position, the ring clasped tightly in my hand. Gone were my feelings of horror and sadness. In their place, a spark of anger ignited. Whoever had done this had gone too far, and I would not rest until they paid for their crimes. Cover her with a cloak before they take her away, I said, my voice like ice. I'll bring this to the captain now. I spun on my heel and strode toward the door, determination pounding through me like a second heartbeat. This ship might be turning into a floating nightmare, but I refused to give in to fear. 15. An indecent situation. Lord Crenshaw's cabin, RMS Etruria, 4 January, 1889.
That's Elizabeth's.
Lady Crenshaw's gaze never left the ring Captain Norwood held out.
Where did you find this?
Captain Norwood drew in a deep breath.
I'm so sorry to be the bearer of bad news, madam, but Miss Crenshaw's body was...
He glanced down, seemingly at a loss on how to describe it.
No, it cannot be.
Lady Crenshaw shook her head, eyes glistening. Lord Crenshaw clutched her arm and she sunk back.
Elizabeth is back in London, I'm sure of it. She must be back home by now. We'll write her and see as soon as we're in New York. There cannot be truth in this.
Her voice broke.
I'm so very sorry for your loss.
Norwood's mouth snapped shut as Lady Crenshaw fell to her knees.
We are doing everything to locate her murderer.
Get out!
Lord Crenshaw's tone was low and dangerous.
Sir, we leave us.
Very well. If you need anything, come directly to-
Damn you in this accursed ship!
He shouted, startling both the captain and myself back.
Forget the ringing endorsement you sought. A workhouse would be better recommended. I will see both you and that circus destroyed.
He slammed the door so hard, the lifeboat hanging outside smacked the wall. Captain Norwood's shoulders heaved with breath.
I'm not fit for this sort of work. Dr. Arden didn't take the news much better. Can't blame either of them. Losing a child is a pain no parent should ever suffer.
Uncle needs to speak with Dr. Arden,
I said slowly, not wishing to be insensitive.
Will you send word and have him meet with Uncle soon?
The captain nodded, though his attention was set on the dark sea.
It was supposed to be a legendary voyage. Now it will simply become infamous. Mephistopheles promised the moon. He swore if I allowed them free passage, that cruise liners with nightly entertainments would become the height of fashion. That our names would be written amongst the stars. He is nothing but a liar.
I wasn't sure how to respond. The entire evening had already spiraled into darkness, and I didn't think it could all be blamed on one person. Witnessing the Crenshaw's grief and now the captain's was too much. And I had more work to do before locking myself away in my own cabin. There's still time to set everything right, I finally said. We've got 3 more nights. Captain Norwood moved away from the door and led me toward my cabin.
3 more opportunities for murder, Miss Wadsworth.
We walked silently after that, and I couldn't help but fear he was correct.
Are you quite mad?
Liza exclaimed, jumping off the bed as I changed into a plainer dress.
How is it all right for you to seek Mephistopheles at this hour, yet if I go to Harry it's out of the question?
Must we really go over this again? I rubbed my temples. I was exhausted and wanted to crawl under my covers and not emerge until we were pulling into New York Harbor. Uncle has already banished you to this cabin and threatened the asylum. And if that isn't enough of a reason, there's always the murderer that's running about this ship.
Liza got that defiant gleam in her eye as she stood and crossed her arms.
Which is why we ought to walk down together. Their rooms aren't far apart. Isn't there safety in groups?
I opened my mouth to argue, but she'd brought up a valid point. Sensing my hesitation, she pressed on.
Not to mention, do you even know where Mephistopheles' cabin is? How do you plan on finding him? Who will go to their grave, lying to defend you, should either of us be caught?
I gave her an exasperated look.
I have questions regarding the murder. It's hardly a clandestine affair you need to lie about. And I am not going to get caught. Oh? And what if Thomas finds out you've been visiting another young man, at night, alone, to simply discuss murder in his chambers without either Uncle or Thomas present? He will think you're...
Liza, I said, interrupting before she could finish that scandalous thought.
Thomas would never be so foolish. We trust each other. He's human, you know. No matter how clinical and intelligent he may be, he's got human emotions. I think you forget that sometimes. He buries them, but they're there.
Part of me wished to give her the letter Houdini had written to his secret lover and see if she was as eager to visit him after seeing firsthand what a scoundrel he was. I drew in a few deep breaths. Tonight wasn't the time to divulge that misery. With any luck, he'd reveal that through his own coarse actions, and I'd never have to give her that terrible letter. After offering an exaggerated long sigh, I threw a cloak at my cousin. I only need to speak with Mephistopheles for a few minutes. You'll need to leave when I do. Liza tossed the cloak about her shoulders and grinned.
This is what it's always like for you, isn't it?
What do you mean?
Always pushing forward, pursuing truth?
Her smile faded, turning into something tinged with sadness.
I always imagined your work with Uncle as an adventure. But it's also quite difficult, isn't it? The things you see.
Murder victims flashed through my memory in rapid fire succession. Victims from Jack the Ripper, torn apart and discarded like rubbish. Bodies drained of blood from just last week while Thomas and I had been studying in Romania. Everywhere I went, death trailed behind. I hoped tonight would not follow suit. I shook those thoughts free.
Come on. It's getting late.
Ropes creaked, the sound evoking images of giants lifting their old bones and gazing at those who dared disturb their centuries-old slumber. Even traveling arm in arm with Liza, I couldn't deny the promenade was an eerie place at night. Liza clutched me closer.
We need to go into that corridor. The stairs will take us down to the next level.
Wind-whipped pieces of hair from my braid, adding to the chills that were already running rampant down my body. I truly did not wish to enter a darkened corridor at night, with a murderer running about, but saw little choice. At least Liza and I were together. There was small comfort in that. I swallowed hard and followed my cousin as she pulled the door open and glanced over her shoulder at me. The corridor lights flickered, the buzz from the bulbs like a swarm of bees defending their hive. Liza moved swiftly down the metal stairs, and I plunged after her, trying to ignore the rapid beat of my heart. or the third set of footsteps I was certain I'd invented in my imagination. We descended for what felt like an entire century, but in reality was only a moment or two. Without hesitation, Liza pushed the door open and peeked out onto the deck of second class.
"Everything is empty," she said, grabbing my hand. "Let's move quickly, though."
She didn't need to tell me again. We raced down the deck, stopping only periodically to glance over our shoulders. Though I still swore we were being followed, no figure appeared. I was certain I wasn't the only passenger aboard this ship who was starting to invent midnight monsters. We hadn't encountered anyone since supper, and the rooms all appeared to be shut up tight, as if they could barricade the evil away.
"There's Mephistopheles' chambers." Liza halted a few doors down from them. "Harry's room is three away. Fetch me as soon as you're ready to leave."
She kissed my cheek quickly and hurried off. I watched her sneak down to Houdini's cabin and slip inside before bringing my fist to the ringmaster's door. I heard something that sounded like papers rustling. I counted off five beats of my heart and knocked again. The door flung open, revealing a masked woman in a robe. Cassie. Judging from the way the fabric clung to her slim frame, I didn't believe she had on anything beneath it. Her unwelcoming expression more than hinted I'd interrupted something. My face burned when I put together what.
I'm so very sorry.
Mephistopheles moved into the doorframe, a lazy grin upon his face. I noticed he was completely dressed, not a wrinkle in his clothing, and his cursed mask was still in place. I almost sagged with relief.
"Come to profess your undying love?"
"However did you know?"
I asked, loud enough for Cassie to hear. I leaned in indecently close and whispered,
"Perhaps when you're dreaming."
"At least it's not in my nightmares,"
he winked.
"That would be most unfortunate for you."
I stood back and stole a glance over his shoulder, noting bolts of fabrics and an odd assortment of netting, pearls, and more sequins than I imagined the world contained. A suit jacket with tassels hanging from the shoulders lay on a table with more embellishments ready to be added. It seemed Mephistopheles had quite the sewing hobby. Yet another piece to add to the puzzle of him.
"Cassie,"
he asked, not sounding at all patient.
"Unless there's anything else, we're done for tonight."
Cassie scrutinized me before slipping out of sight. I recalled what Liza had said. Cassie was close with the ringmaster. I suddenly wished to pull a disappearing act of my own. No wonder she was so annoyed. I'd ruined her romantic plans. As if reading my thoughts, Mephistopheles tilted his head.
"Cassie was just finishing up her final fitting. Her new costume is a real showstopper. You ought to see it."
"It's not any of my business what you're doing," I said, "and I didn't ask."
"No, you didn't."
His lopsided grin was back in place. If he was disturbed by the earlier murder, or having the remainder of his evening tryst ruined, he didn't show it.
"But you appear awfully relieved for someone who doesn't care."
Before I could argue, he stepped back inside and re-emerged with a heavy coat.
"See yourself out, Cassie. I'll have someone drop the costume off before the show tomorrow."
I stood there, mouth agape.
"You cannot be serious."
"Not often, but I do have my moments."
"You're going to put on another show tomorrow? That's madness."
"Which is good business, Miss Wadsworth."
"Of course it is. How silly of me to think having another show after a body burned on stage tonight was anything other than a tremendous idea."
The ringmaster raised a brow above his mask. It truly was a remarkable feat.
"It is wise, because it will serve as a distraction for those who seek it. Beats the alternative of locking everyone away for three nights, jumping at every creak and groan the ship makes. That, my dear, is madness-inducing. Lock a man up, and cracks begin to show."
"Is that something you know firsthand?"
He motioned for us to move down the deck, far enough to remain unheard when Cassie left. We kept a respectable distance, but it still felt as if we were too close. Once we'd reached the end of the ship, I leaned against the railing and kept my focus off of the ringmaster. I needed to think clearly, and he made it difficult with his brash flirting. Wind nipped at my ears and neck. The coldness helped snap my thoughts into place.
Well?